criminal liability to owning or possessing or breeding a bird that is actually used in a cockfight. And I guess I would ask you, is the intent here, is that what the intent of the bill really is to get at, the breeding? And then the question I would ask, if that is the case, is how you respond to the issue of attaching criminal liability without apparent, the apparent nexus or requirement that the person be knowingly or intentionally involved in the actual criminal enterprise?
Let me point out that the current law, as it exists, with the exemption for shipping birds out of state, is actually what is inconsistent with the Oregon law. That does create the loophole here. This new bill simply gets rid of that and cleans that up. It's important to recognize that in Oregon, like in California and in other states where there are intent statutes, and I believe there's in the neighborhood of 20-plus states that have statutes that are very similar to this, that ban the possession of the birds with the intent they be fought. These are specific intent crimes, which means you can't go out willy-nilly and just because someone has game fowl staked out on their property, start seizing their birds. And I certainly wouldn't support the idea that anybody should ever do something like that. It will require that a judge review and that a district attorney review proper evidence to secure a search warrant, and there has to be real evidence. There must be either a circumstantial evidence, direct evidence, and other information that's going to support a search warrant, and evidence that the birds were actually possessed for fighting purposes, were actually trained for fighting purposes.
Well, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Since I don't think the bill says that. What the bill says to me is if the police bust a cockfight and then they can trace that bird back to the farm on which it was bred, the owner is busted because the bird was actually used in a cockfight without any proof that the owner bred or himself or herself bred that bird for cockfighting or even knew that it was going to be used in a cockfight.
I think that I don't want to over worry this because the bottom line is a judge would have to go along with that line of thinking. A jury would have to go along with that line of thinking.
Well, they'll be governed by the law.
They will. But I think there are situations that occur, and this is very common, where someone will be arrested at a cockfight with birds that they brought from another jurisdiction. Most cockfights are multi-jurisdictional in nature. And this would give them the ability to be able to, if they're arrested in, say, Klamath County, and they reside in Columbia County, the arrest information could be transmitted to the authorities in Columbia County to do a search warrant, if they so wished, to find additional evidence to support the case that existed in Klamath County. Usually when these people are traveling birds long distances, they come from a fairly extensive bank of fighting birds that are being grown someplace else. And increasingly common is the use of combines or groups of people that will get together and pool their resources in order to spread evidence out. I don't think that this opens the door to abuse of the law in any way, shape, or form. I think what it does is it recognizes that there are intricacies involved in these sorts of operations. They are fairly sophisticated, and this does give law enforcement the tools that it needs to be able to go after those in those sorts of cases.
One more. I want to clear. I'm not defending cockfighting here or breeders of birds, but I am concerned that we be very particular with the language we use in this bill and how far we extend criminal liability, and that's my concern.
Chair Williams, could I address that for one?
Yes.
Okay. Chair Williams, Representative Shetterly. I was talking to the district attorney from Columbia County, who is Steve Atchison, and he actually can't be here today, but he submitted a letter with respect to the raid in 1989. But he said that same argument was used when they were trying to track down who actually sold the fighting birds to the individual participants. And he said the key for them was the word knowingly. Were those folks did those folks knowingly give or sell the birds with the knowledge that they knew they were going to fight them? And again, I'm not an attorney. I think the letter would also address it very well. But, it, you know, it's a similar, it's identical to the language in the dogfighting statute.
Yeah.
And maybe Sergeant Larry Welty could also add some, just talk about that as well. He's here today from the Oregon State Police.
Okay, good. Thank you. We're going to call up the next panel. Appreciate it. And we are having some, we have 10:30 session today by my calendar, so we're going to have to pick the pace up a little bit. I'll bring forward Kim Longley, Dr. Peets, Meg Miller, and if we can find an additional chair to use, I'd like to bring up Sergeant Welty at the same time if he's here. And we'll put all four of you up here at once. And I would ask you to the extent you've got written testimony, please submit it. If you've got stuff to add, please add it. But if it's a lot of repetition, I'd encourage you not to take the time. And why don't we start with Dr. Longley?
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to testify this morning in support of House Resolution 2930. My name is Dr. Kim Longley, and I'm a veterinarian practicing in Lane County, specifically the Eugene area. I work on small and large animals. I'm also a member of the board of our local Humane Society and work closely with our Lane County Animal Regulation Authority to enforce the animal statutes. I'm testifying today to personally relate to you the need for the strengthening of these statutes based on an incident we experienced in Lane County a few months ago. Cockfighting is currently illegal in the state of Oregon. However, enforcement of this statute is severely hampered by a loophole which allows for the raising and shipment of these birds to other states where fighting is legal, and a loophole which literally was used in my county, a loophole large enough to drive a truck full of birds out. What happened is that recently a drug raid was conducted north of Eugene, and gamecocks were found on the property. The Lane County Animal Regulation Authority was contacted, and Mike Wellington, who is the program manager, went out to conduct an investigation. But simply possessing these birds and having them there with circumstantial evidence is not enough for him to secure a warrant to get these birds off the property and into custody. It took several hours for video evidence to be made available and reviewed, warrants to be secured, and the animals to be found a place to be properly housed via the Humane Society. When he went back out to pick up these birds after warrants were secured, they were gone, vanished. This incident really crystallized for us in Lane County and for me personally the need for strengthening the ability of local law enforcement, animal control, and humane societies to enforce these laws by closing this glaring loophole that renders the current statute practically unenforceable. I also would like to submit into written testimony, which I gave to Representative Lowe, a letter from Dr. Suzanne Millman, who is the Director of Science Programs, Farm Animals and Sustainable Agricultural Section for the Humane Society of the United States, who states, quote, that since the manner in which these gamecocks are raised so strongly affects their aggressiveness, it is sensible that the legislature extend the definition of cockfighting to include any individual that knowingly owns, possesses, keeps, breeds, or trains a fighting bird. The rest of her letter is included in written testimony, and I would encourage you to read that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Longley. Dr. Peets?
Thank you, Chairman Williams and members of the committee. I, since much of the information has been covered today, I'll just briefly summarize what was what I've submitted. I personally attended a cockfight back in the 80s in eastern Oregon. I'm a veterinarian. I grew up in around Tie Valley and was invited to attend a cockfight. I find these personally and professionally, it was very repugnant. I was happened to be president of the Humane Society of the Willamette Valley at that time. This is something that has no place in Oregon. We have to connect the legislation to the raising of these birds. I have a letter that was submitted by Patrice Klein, who is a veterinarian and a diplomat of the American College of Poultry Veterinarians. She works with the Humane Society of the United States. If you would read her comments on disease, that's the major thing that I will address today.
She says, in responding to concerns raised regarding health and disease issues in cockfighting birds, it is important to review the natural historical origins of these birds, the potential of disease transmission, and the perspective of the commercial poultry industry. Wild jungle fowl originating in Asia are common ancestors for much of the commercial poultry industry today. However, once these original jungle fowl were domesticated over time and commercially bred to enhance certain genetic traits favorable to commercial poultry production, the descendants' genotype and phenotype relationships to their ancestors no longer exist. In comparison, fighting cocks more closely resemble their wild jungle fowl ancestors and are behaviorally much different. Although these birds exhibit territorial behavior and demonstrate aggression towards non-specific competitors in the natural world, such competitions generally end when the wild jungle fowl loser is chased away by the more aggressive bird. Death is not commonplace. However, in fighting cocks, the birds are intentionally raised to enhance their aggression toward one another. They are tethered to their houses, which are positioned within visual range of other fighting cocks, yet are unable to make direct contact. This constant stimulation promotes territorial and aggression, and in the fighting ring, neither bird is able to escape, as would occur in nature, thereby forcing a battle to the death. From a veterinarian commercial poultry industry perspective, fighting cocks represent a nidus of common poultry diseases. Interestingly, fighting cocks and the wild-type birds tend to be fairly disease-resistant, possibly reflecting a disease resilience and immunocompetence not distinguished by or diminished by the extensive selective breeding in commercial poultry flocks. Although disease-resistant, fighting cock breeds often are antibody-positive. They test seropositive for serious avian viral diseases such as avian influenzas, and yet they are not clinically affected. This could suggest that these birds may be reservoirs for such pathogens, which could pose a disease threat to commercial poultry industry. In summary, support of House Bill 2930 would support the biosecurity concerns of the commercial poultry industry and the avian health concerns of the veterinary profession and the animal welfare concerns of our society. Therefore, prohibiting cockfighting and relevant related activities would not affect routine disease surveillance nor increase the likelihood of disease exposure. And that letter is by Patricia Neal, the veterinarian. So,
good. Thank you, Dr. Peets. We appreciate your testimony. Ms. Miller.
Good morning, Chair Williams, members of the committee. My name is Meg Miller. I'm the Assistant Director of the Animal Legal Defense Fund. We're located in Portland. And the focus of our office is animal cruelty, and we have a hotline where we receive over 14,000 correspondents from people all over the country reporting animal cruelty. And animal fighting would certainly fall under animal cruelty, and we receive a lot of reports. I have submitted testimony on behalf of our organization. I've also submitted a letter that the Columbia County District Attorney wrote, and I'd like to just take a few minutes to read that letter because I think it might address some of the questions and concerns that have been raised. So, dear Chairman Williams, I have been asked to provide comments from a prosecutor's perspective on the provisions of House Bill 2930. Which is presently before the committee for hearing. Unfortunately, I have commitments at the courthouse that cannot be rescheduled. I'm sending my thoughts on the bill and hope they will be of use to the committee. I have read the bill and urged the committee to pass out the bill as it is presently drafted. By way of introduction, I would like the committee to know that I have been a prosecutor for over 21 years. I was a deputy district attorney in Columbia County for 18 years and have been the district attorney for 3 years. I have had experience in prosecuting animal fighting cases under the present statutes. In 1989, law enforcement in Columbia County conducted a raid on a major cockfighting operation. This was a sophisticated operation with extensive physical facilities, arena, grandstands, concession booths, cages, and so forth. This operation conducted regular events on a published schedule and drew participants from as far away as Guam and the Philippines, as well as most areas of the United States. The day of the raid, about 350 persons were cited. Many others were in attendance but not cited. During execution of the search warrant, law enforcement seized cash, drugs, and weapons. In fact, an armed guard was stationed at the entrance to the facility, but he was disarmed by officers without incident. My recollection is that birds were brought to this site for purpose of cockfighting from the state of Oregon as well as from other states. In fact, many birds were being raised at the site, a large farm in rural Columbia County.
Ms. Miller?
Yeah.
Can I interrupt you?
Sure.
We have a copy of the letter, and we'll put it in the record, and we'll read it.
Okay.
But because of our time schedule, I'm going to ask
you
not read the whole letter.
Okay, that's fine.
Is that all right?
That's fine.
And the rest of us will have the ability, if we need to get a hold of District Attorney Atchison
okay.
in Columbia County.
He does address the intent and knowingly issue in there,
I think
it's important.
That, and I'm going to encourage our primary questioner on that subject to read the comments, and if it satisfies you, good. If it doesn't, I encourage you to call him and have a conversation with him.
Okay. He's not going to vote, is he?
No, he's not. Well, at least not right now. Sergeant Welty.
Chair Williams, members of the committee, I'm Larry Welty. I'm with the Oregon State Police. I'm a sergeant and assistant commander of the Drug Enforcement Section. I prepared a letter, and that's basically where I'm going to just about stop. I just want to say that we're here to support the bill, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer any.
I have one.
Representative Krieger.
Chair Williams, Sergeant, have there been birds seized in Oregon as a result of cockfighting?
I believe so, yes.
What was the disposition of the birds?
I'm not aware of that, but I could get that back to you.
I think the committee needs to know what happens to these birds. Does anyone on the panel know?
Just from observation, there were birds that were seized in a fight, I believe, in Myrtle Creek, and they were returned to the owners because of the lack of ability to of the way the statute was written. Is that not true? Yes.
Any further, Krieger, do you have another question?
Not for now, probably later.
Okay. Representative Shetterly.
Well, if I don't mean to beat a dead horse. That's probably a bad analogy.
Yes, if that isn't a crime, we're going to make it one.
But I just, for the, and these are all good folks, and I'm not, we're, I'm, again, I'm on the same team here, but I am concerned about the quality of our legislation. And the reason I'm not satisfied about the intent, and I'll just say this again for the record, it's two things. One, we have the element of knowingly in Section 2, and that's if one owns or possesses, et cetera, a fighting bird. That takes you back up to the definition of what is a fighting bird, and that's one that's intentionally bred or trained for use in. Here comes the killer. It's the disjunctive or that is actually used. And that's the part that, to me, suggests that you can knowingly possess this bird. You knowingly possess it. You sure do. What makes you criminally liable, though, is the ultimate use to which somebody else puts that bird that at least under this statute, doesn't require that element of intent. That's the part that I have trouble with.
But I have a question about that.
And I'm not even sure that's
one of the witnesses?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Representative Vicki Walker.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I apologize. Maybe somebody has explained this while I was down in another hearing. But I was discussing this with Representative Shetterly. Can any one of these roosters be used and bred for fighting purposes, or are there specific breeds that are used for fighting and nothing else? You don't eat them. You just breed them to fight them.
Or show.
So does anybody on this panel know that, or someone in the room is going to know that? Someone back there knows that.
Well, I think what we'll do.
Eric would be the.
There are, I believe, 27
different. Can you identify yourself for the record again,
Eric,
so it's clear on
Eric
the tape?
Eric Sackish, Humane Society of the U.S. I believe there are currently 27 different breeds of game fowl that are recognized by the APA. All of those fowl can technically be fought. There are certain breeds that cockfighters gravitate toward more than others. And when you weren't here earlier, I did mention the fact that fighting the physical attributes that are desirable between a fighting cock and a show, a bird that's destined for show purposes, are very similar. And it would be virtually impossible for a person just to go look at a yard of birds and say, deduce automatically, these are fighting cocks destined for the cockpit. You would be able to look at birds individually and determine that they were not going to be used for show, depending on things that are important for showing, like the way the bird is trimmed. Plumage is all important in show birds. The color of the eyes, the overall conformation of the bird, that sort of thing. And you wouldn't expect to see scarring on a bird that would be used in a poultry show. And I speak from experience. I go to poultry shows regularly. My kids were little 4-H'ers. You know, those are things that are important in shows. You're not going to see some cock that's been used in a fight that's all beat up, has feathers that are in terrible condition and scarring to its head and that sort of thing being used for show purposes.
I understand that, sir, but what I'm trying to get at is this question that Representative Shetterly has and how we can work with it. I'm talking about the ones bred from babies. The babies aren't out there fighting already. So how would you know a baby cock is one that is being bred specifically for fighting? How would you make that decision?
You wouldn't know, independent of everything else. You couldn't know that.
You couldn't know that.
You couldn't know that, independent of everything else. When we do an intent case, it's based, and any court is going to uphold those sorts of things. If it's a specific intent crime, you have to look at the totality of the evidence. And that means you look not only at the birds and their condition, their environment, all of the things that surround that, but you're also looking at the person, the statements they've made, the evidence that's been presented, the witness statements, what are the sort of paraphernalia that they have in their house, that sort of thing. A person who's involved in a legitimate poultry exhibition who has no interest in cockfighting will be miles away from people involved in cockfighting, and they will make sure that they don't have any of the typical accoutrements that go along with cockfighting on their property, anything that would suggest that they somehow support that activity. Whereas most cockfighters that I've known do concurrently show their birds so that they can use that as a front. Most cockfighters that I know also state that they send their birds out of state to sell in other countries and other states, when in fact most of them are doing most of their sales right there in their home area.
Okay, thank you. That clears that up for me.
Any other questions for this panel? I need to get the other panel up before we get to 10:30 because we're going to lose some people that aren't going to be able to come back this afternoon. Thank you very much, all of you, for being here. I'd now like to call up Dr. Hermes, Jonathan Schulter, and Ross Day, and Larry Matthews. I'm going to start with Mr. Day, because I understand he has a court appearance in Multnomah County later this afternoon, so we'll get him on the record and then out of here. So, Representative Wilson wondered what you'd done to have to be in court. I think he's actually representing somebody.
Okay. Thank you for making that clarification, Mr. Chair. For your record, my name is Ross Day. I represent the Oregon Gamefowl Breeders Association, and Poultry Pack represents approximately the interest of 400 gamefowl breeders in the state of Oregon and 200 gamefowl caregivers in the state of Oregon. Gamefowl industry is anywhere between a $14 and $18 million industry in the state of Oregon per year, and of course we're here in Oregon Gamefowl Breeders Association and Poultry Pack are here in opposition to House Bill 2930. I think Representative Shetterly has hit the nail on the head, and that is that our primary concern is the definition of fighting bird and the effects it will have on the industry. The bill as it's currently written will, we believe, quite simply put farmers out of business, and I don't think that's I guess that's a policy choice that the committee has to make, but that the committee needs to understand that is a very real effect of this measure. Now, I'm not an expert on the uses of these birds. I don't know what they are used for, and what, you know, I can't testify as to what the various uses of the birds are for. But there's one thing I do want to make clear with regards to the bill, and that is, specifically, if you look at the summary states creates the crime of cockfighting. Well, the crime of cockfighting has been illegal in the state of Oregon for a number of years, and this industry has been in existence in the state since cockfighting has been made illegal. We've heard a lot of testimony today from proponents of the bill about all the ills of cockfighting and all the terrible things that happen. And while I agree that, you know, drugs and guns and so on and so forth, those illegal, those crimes are bad, the fact of the matter is that cockfighting is still illegal and is currently, right now, as of this moment, illegal in the state of Oregon. What the bill does is it makes cockfighting illegal, a felony, and creates a new crime, that is the crime of participation in a cockfight. Furthermore, it expands the definition of the crime of cockfighting to include such things as services in furtherance of, which include such things as advertising. So let's say that somebody who is about to run a cockfight decides he types up a flyer, goes down to your local Kinko's store, and hands it to the clerk, and the clerk takes it. He runs, you know, 100 copies, hands it back. Presumably, under a broad interpretation of this bill, and I think that's what the proponents of this measure would advocate for, the broadest possible interpretation of this measure, that clerk would be guilty of the crime of cockfighting and facing a felony charge because he provided services in furtherance of a cockfight. Furthermore, the measure also has civil forfeiture provisions, which, pending the outcome of the Measure 3 litigation, would likely be unconstitutional as well. It seems to me that a lot of the testimony that we heard from the proponents of the measure, their concerns weren't so much, I mean, their concerns obviously are that cockfighting was occurring in the state of Oregon, but the fact that the law enforcement couldn't seize the birds, and if Measure 3 is that ultimately upheld, those sections of the bill would likely be held unconstitutional, and consequently would be back to where we're starting from. That I'm going to leave it there, and I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Matthews at the end, who can end of the table, who can educate the committee on some of the uses of these birds. Mr. Matthews is currently the executive director of Poultry Pack. He's a director emeritus of the Oregon Game Fowl Breeders Association, and he's also director emeritus of the United States Game Fowl Breeders Association.
Good morning. Good morning. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. And interestingly enough, and timely, Representative Walker's.
I'm being reminded by the clerk. I need you to get your name and.
Yeah, Larry. I thought he did that. Okay, Larry Matthews, representing the Oregon Game Fowl Breeders Association.
Okay. Thank you.
And the Poultry Pack. There are a number of uses of these birds and of the poultry in general, and I have been asked to go over that for the edification of the committee. First is the plumage. Oregon has an advantage in the climatic conditions of in this state in that it's very conducive to high-quality plumage on a bird, not just game fowl, but on a bird. They draw moisture in through their feet as well as through the air and through their body and through the feed that they consume. And as a result of that, we are able to produce on the male species a saddle, a hackle, and cape feathers that are the best to be used in fly tying for fishing, and that is another purpose for these poultry to be continued. And you can't tell the difference between one that is being raised for fly tying or one that would possibly ultimately be used in sport. Showbirds, yes, these same birds, because of the same reasons that I've just cited, They are showbirds. They are beautiful, well-plumed, sparkling to a great degree because of the type of weather that we have here. And when we talk about shipping them and the curtailment that this bill would put on shipping a bird identifiable as a gamecock, the major show that we attend is in Houston, Texas, which is the largest livestock exhibition in the United States. And that, of course, entails travel. Children and 4-H'ers, also the younger breeders, do indeed participate in state and county fairs as well as just plain poultry shows. Food. The people that visit my farm tell me that there are approximately 35,000 individuals of various Asian country descents in the state of Oregon, and they prefer to buy live poultry. Their marketing method is to come to your farm and to buy live poultry. They prefer not to eat white chickens for their cultural background, and therefore they are a large source of the poultry that I market directly. And I would add that I did check with the Woodburn Auction, which is a local animal auction. Approximately 25% of the income from their poultry section in the auction is from gamefowl. So that I chose to search that out so that I could give some factual data to you. The export is, of course, important and probably is the highest value of these birds because they go to other countries. The infusion of a bird from a different climate, from a different region, from a different atmosphere, genetically increases the stability and the health factors of a bird that would be of the same breed being bred in the Philippines, as an example. And so this crossbreeding and this infusion of fresh genes, so to speak, is important for the continuation of the species. We are also, we participate, and recently during the avian influenza epidemic that occurred in California approximately 7 years ago, we are what is considered to be sentinel birds. The birds are outside. They're not contained. They're normally tethered with a leg tether, and as a result of that, they are automatically the first to be exposed to any kind of disease that would come in by migratory fowl, which could come from wherever, not just ducks and geese, but other migratory birds that fly over the area. And we had an agreement, and still do, with the United States Department of Agriculture here locally, where we identified 12 farms on a state level, that if those farms were to test hot, which is their termination for disease, that then they would be advised and that those poultry would be eradicated. There is additional cooperation with the universities in that for some reason, and I don't know the explanation for it, but for some reason, the first 3 days of a game bird's life is just a huge increase in size versus the more domesticated. They grow extremely fast in the first 3 days, and therefore that genetic makeup is being infused and trying to be infused into other broiler parts and broiler chicks at Penn State, Pennsylvania State. So there are benefits other than just what you'd like to be led to believe today. I want to leave you with one thought, and that is almost anyone that goes shopping in a supermarket is going to go by the poultry case, and they're going to see Cornish game hens. And I'm going to leave you with this comment. There would be no Cornish game hens without a Cornish game cock. All they are butchered before they mature, and therefore you do have game cocks, and many of us are eating them all the time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Why don't we move to Dr. Hermes?
Thank you for having me today. My name is Dr. James Hermes. I'm Extension Poultry Specialist at Oregon State University. I've been with Extension Service at Oregon State since 1987 as a county agent in the McMinnville office, and was moved to campus late 92, early 93 as extension poultry specialist for statewide responsibilities in developing and implementing educational programs for poultry producers throughout the state, whether they be small backyard producers or large commercial producers producing eggs and meat for consumers. I have been involved with numerous species of poultry type birds for production purposes, including, but not limited to, chickens, turkeys, game birds, which would be things like pheasants, partridges, and quail, ratites, which are the ostriches and emus, cage birds, which are hookbills and softbills, which are the finches and the parrots and things of this nature, waterfowl, as well as other kinds of birds. There are lots and lots of different kinds of birds that are raised for various kinds of reasons within the state of Oregon. With regard to the current bill that is before you, as Extension Poultry Specialist, I have 2 points that I would like to bring up. First of all, it is virtually impossible to determine whether a chicken of any breed is being raised for cockfighting, as it is the very nature of chickens to fight. Fighting among chickens is where the term pecking order came from. They establish dominance. And whether they be an Old English game chicken, or they are a Rhode Island Red, or indeed a commercial fryer chicken, which are the most docile of all of the chickens today, they fight. This is a normal, natural behavior in chickens. One of the most popular exhibition breeds that we have of fowl is the Old English game, which happens to also be the most common cockfighting bird as well. So there is no way to determine which of these is raised for fighting or exhibition. A number of people in the state of Oregon grow Old English game, as well as the other kinds of game fowl, which would be things like Indian game, modern game, and others. For poultry enthusiasts who take birds to open class shows, as well as 4-H youth and FFA youth, and they all use these breeds for exhibition, and they are similar breeds that can be used in cockfighting. It is my concern that many of these exhibition fowl producers who produce these fowl, both young and old, because they raise or the management is similar that they employ, could be construed as intentionally raising fighting birds. It's not possible to determine the difference until the act is committed, if in this case many exhibition fowl will be confiscated and destroyed needlessly. And there was a question earlier, what happens to these birds after they have been identified as cockfighting birds? They are destroyed. Secondly, while the poultry industry is not directly affected by this legislation, the potential impact is quite great. Since many poultry producers, gamecock producers in particular, are passionate about their birds, it's not simply a hobby, it is a passion in their mind. It is my concern that many of these producers may simply go underground, raising their birds in anonymity. When this occurs, potentially devastating poultry diseases such as Newcastle's disease and avian influenza, which we have experienced in the western U.S. in the last decades, and they are extremely devastating to the poultry industry, can remain harbored in these anonymous flocks for long periods of time, causing reinfections of commercial flocks. And as was stated, these flocks are sentinel flocks. And the Oregon Department of Agriculture works with these producers at this time to identify diseases that can affect birds. Just simply in the last 10 years, there have been identifications of pylorum, which is a devastating disease in poultry, if it gets into commercial flocks, of disease called coryza, which hasn't been seen in Oregon in over 10 years since until that point, and a couple of years ago, a disease called laryngotracheitis, which is a devastating disease in layer chickens, which was identified in small flocks, and there was great concern when the state fair arrived and many small producers, children in particular, 4-H, were vaccinating birds heavily prior to the fair. And these gamecock producers work well with the Oregon Department of Ag in programs called NPIP, which is National Poultry Improvement Plan, which provides that all birds being sold out of state or hatching eggs being out of state are from NVIP tested birds, where birds are blood tested for particular diseases that impact the poultry industry. It is with the cooperation of the game cock industry that this testing can occur. If these producers go underground, we will not know where they are, and these birds will no longer be tested for these diseases, which could have a great impact on our approximately $100 million poultry industry in Oregon. And it was with the cooperation of these producers that Oregon became a pelorum-free state about 8 or 10 years ago, and that we continue to have that status.
Dr. Hermes, Representative Krieger, I believe, has a question.
Yes, sir.
Yes, Chair Williams. Doctor, how are the birds disposed of? You mentioned that. Hey, if they're seized, they're destroyed. How are they destroyed?
Depends on who's doing the destroying. Sometimes their neck is broken, or they are exsanguinated or similar to processing, or they're simply decapitated.
Kind of like a farmer used to do years ago.
That's correct.
And what happens to the bird itself? And it's been killed and is it thrown away? Is it arsenal?
I assume it's buried or disposed of in landfill or something of that nature.
Thank you.
May I ask a stupid question?
You certainly may, Representative Ward.
Well, I will pre-identify this one as a really stupid question.
There are no stupid questions.
Yes, you might like this one.
I was looking at
the print that you provided, and it really gave me some good information about what a game bird looks like. And I noticed that there were spurs on hens, too. For the purposes of thoroughness of the statute we're contemplating, and also just for my own edification, do hens fight one another with
those
spurs?
They will fight.
Are those used in sporting events?
Not typically, but the hens will fight. And by way of educating you on that, there is male hormone produced by the hen's ovary. That's what makes her comb turn nice and red. And occasionally there's enough hormone to cause spur development in some female chickens of all breeds.
I did pass a note to Representative Shetterly about this, and he identified that activity as hen pecking.
That was a confidential communication.
Yeah.
Be careful what you say.
Yeah, please.
Larry Matthews,
thank you.
Oregon Health Breeders Association. Hens grow.
They do?
They get to a point, normally 18 months of age.
Gentlemen, I hate to do this, and I'll welcome you all back when we reconvene again this afternoon at 3:30 for further questioning of the committee. We will get to the remaining witnesses at that time, and we apologize that we've had to do this. But we are going to begin the floor session, so I do need to adjourn or recess the committee at this time. And members, I just inform you that I understand that today's lunch in the